big screen time. Paul Whittington from the Indo is here. Paul, what's happening on the big screen? As if I didn't know.
As if you didn't know, it's Tarantino time again. Only his 9th film, which kind of surprises me, you know, given how kind of...
Well, you're not including True Romance or stuff like that, are you?
That's true, stuff he wrote. That's a good point. 9th film he's directed. I noticed the other day, actually... that I was at the Lighthouse, and their initial screenings of this film, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, were all sold out.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever you want to say about him, he's one of the very few directors left who can get a film made on his name and people
will go
and see.
There's no question.
It.
Steven Spielberg would be the best known, and he's number two. I don't care. Yeah. Christopher Nolan's all the rest of it. He is. Whether he should be or not is another thing.
That's true. He just has this recognition with people, and people know what to expect from him. I'd love to see a breakdown of... gender-wise, in terms of who sees his films and who likes them, who doesn't, because my
I'd say
gut is
75
very male.
More.
At least.
Yeah, 80% male, yeah.
Anyhow, this
Once
has
Upon
been,
a Time in Hollywood.
Yeah, and this went down very well in Cannes, and obviously there are lots of points of interest because it's sort of, although not really, but it's kind of based around the Manson family murders, the Sharon Tate murders and so on, and it also stars for the first time together Brad Pitt and Leonardo DiCaprio, which is kind of interesting in and of itself, because they're both actors who would tend to you know have been cast separately in similar roles, kind of thing. So this pair, anyway, Leo DiCaprio is Rick Dalton, who's this TV actor who he was in this thing called Bounty Law, you remember Bonanza and things like that. You'd remember things like that, Dave. It's a 60s TV drama. He was in it. He was doing well. He hoped to get into movies just the way Clint Eastwood did via Rawhide. It hasn't happened. And in fact, his show
has been
canned.
Does he take the spaghetti route? He does.
Well, he's being told by his new agent, who's played by Al Pacino with very strange hair, that he should go to Italy and do a Western. In fact, in the end, he does. But meantime, he's worrying. He's quite histrionic. He's always given out. He drinks too much. His chance has gone. What's he going to do? And the only person who's prepared to sit down and listen to all this is his friend and stuntman of many years, Cliff Booth, who's played by Brad Pitt. And he seems to be this very zen-like, happy-go-lucky person who likes martial arts and bull terriers, but other than that he seems to have a very simple life, and he's prepared to drive your man around and listen to all his nonsense. These are the central pair, and the only sort of bright spot on Rick's horizon is the fact that two very famous people have moved next door to him on Cielo Drive, and they are of course Roman Polanski and Sharon Tate, and he watches them out his window going in their sports car to A-list parties that he's not invited to, and he thinks, gosh, aren't they lucky, but maybe they're not so lucky. We see Manson obliquely. He turns up because famously he did a few months before. Wasn't it Terry Melcher, Doris Day's son,
Doris
who
Day's
used to live
son,
in that house?
And he wasn't there that night.
Manson had it in for him because he had some record deal thing, because Manson fancies himself a singer. So we see him knocking around, and we also get introduced to the family who live out on the Span Ranch, because Cliff goes out there one time. It's a very good piece, actually.
The family, in inverted commas, like the kind of the
Manson's
kind of hippie
acolytes.
Family.
Yeah. And he goes out there, and this is probably one of the best sequences in the film. It's kind of this Hitchcockian thing where he goes out there and you wonder, is anything going to happen, and so forth. So that is that. And what this film does well is that it very lovingly recreates this tipping point in Hollywood, the end of the 60s, where everything was about to change totally.
And very important in a personal way to Tarantino.
Yeah, absolutely, because he grew up watching all these TV shows in a, one imagines, a very obsessive way, and he pays homage to them here very lavishly. When DiCaprio's character stars in something, we get 10 minutes of the show, we get recreated, you know, TV, stiff TV interviews. He does all that very well, but his film meanders.
Come on. Did you ever see a Tarantino movie that didn't meander?
Well, I think Jackie Brown was pretty good.
Yeah.
And,
I'm not saying it wasn't good.
I don't think they meander.
You better be prepared for
meandering. They do meander. I don't think Inglourious Basterds meandered. But however,
Inglourious Basterds had 5 separate stories almost.
Yeah,
that's really
that,
what it
that
was.
Came together.
But
yeah,
it was a bit of a meander in some ways.
Yeah, it was. Well, for me, there are always good things.
I mean, the woman who escaped from one of the floorboards in the first story ends up having a cinema.
That's
the fourth and fifth.
Right, Melanie Long, yeah, but the thing with this is it does do a certain amount of stuff well, but it is extremely self-indulgent.
Tarantino.
The characters don't quite seem like characters. Again, Tarantino, they seem like versions of himself.
Is this movie about the end of an era?
Well, yes, it is about the end of an era. It's about the final death of old Hollywood, but it's also about Tarantino's beginnings, and there's stuff of interest in that. However, like the Margot Robbie plays Sharon Tate. She's portrayed as this kind of idiot Barbie who at one point goes to a cinema, and actually she tries to get in on the fact that she's famous and not pay. One assumes they had money at that point, and sits down to watch herself in a film and smiles in this childlike way and says very little otherwise, and is kind of this idiot. Whereas it's the two boys who get all this sort of, you know, the Tarantino inconsequential patter, of which there is maybe slightly less than usual. But it's a very frustrating, unsatisfying film for
you
me.
You do some realize people, a lot of the people who are going to these sellouts that you mentioned are going for the inconsequential patter.
Oh, absolutely, and for the
think
for
of the, all the great inconsequential supposedly patter that was in, say, you know, I don't know, like Pulp Fiction.
Pulp Fiction. Oh well, some of it's when it's good, it's brilliant. Like, you know, anybody who can write 10 minutes about, you know, about chips, mac and cheese, is brilliant. But he sometimes writes too much. That's not so much the problem here. It's just that it's so self-indulgent. And also, and as always in Tarantino films, you get this explosion of nihilistic violence at the end, which there's a sort of revenge fantasy thing in here as well. But I think sometimes it's supposed to be funny. I don't find it
funny.
Yeah,
I'm with you on that. A lot of the apologists for a lot of that kind of stuff in previous movies, it's not convincing.
Or that they say he's making a statement about it. No, he's not. So it's bits and pieces for me. Parts of it, as usual, parts of it very nice, really well done. Actually, DiCaprio is very good, and Brad Pitt, who is a more limited kind of actor, is pretty good as well. But it just frustrated me.
Yeah,
but other people won't be frustrated by it.
Okay, so Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and if you're looking for a kind of a story and a narrative, forget it. It's a Tarantino movie. Yeah. It will be all over the place. Yeah. And one other thing too, they say he's going to make one last one in number 10. I believe it's going to be a horror movie. Oh, well, who knows?
Christ.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. Moving swiftly on, what else is there on this one, Paul?
Good Boys.
Good Boys, yeah.
Yeah.
Seth Rogen, isn't it, or something else?
Seth Rogen produced, he did not write, but it is in a way an attempt. Remember films like Superbad and things like that? It's kind of an attempt to bring that sort of atmosphere into the world of tweens, which are sort of, you know, sort of 11, 12 year olds, just sort of hitting puberty, difficult age. And this group of 12 year olds, Max, Thor, and Lucas, Thor is apparently his name, but I presume it's on his birth cert, have been friends forever, and they're preparing to enter sixth grade, but they feel they don't know enough about sex, so they decide to educate themselves. Max has been invited to a kissing party for the cool kids, and he wants to know, find out how it's done. They take to the internet, you know, the source of all wisdom. And actually, the three or four funny jokes in this film come from that. There's a bit where they're looking at porn, which they misspell at first, and they say about a lady in it, we can't see what they're looking at. They say, "How many husbands does she have?" And that's funny. And there's about three or four other funny lines, but mainly, like, they say the F word a lot, and they're 12, and that's
like
funny for 5 minutes.
Of the movies I've seen. I mean, I even saw the other one the other day, Booksmart, and regardless of how much better
I like Booksmart.
Yeah, no, regardless of how much better it might be, if I don't see another one of those kinds of, like, high school,
I won't hear a bad
parties,
word spoken about Booksmart. Right, I thought it was a great film, and nobody went to see it.
Really?
Nobody went to see it.
Yeah, because I got
totally
rave
flopped.
Reviews. Yeah, I thought it was all right. Yeah. Anyway, go on.
It didn't get any rave
Good Boys is all right.
It didn't get any rave reviews from you.
No.
Yeah, Good Boys is almost all right. It's I was made slightly uncomfortable as well by some of the stuff that that they were doing. They're trying to walk the tightrope of kind of innocence versus experience, and it doesn't quite work.
All right, okay. What about Dora and the Lost City of Gold?
Dora and the Lost City of Gold. Anyone who's ever had a child in the last 20 years knows who Dora is. It's kind of irritatingly perky little, from an adult perspective, 7-year-old cartoon girl who goes on jungle adventures with a monkey and this sentient backpack and a talking map. That's what she does. This is not a cartoon, it's a live action film. And Isabelle Monet, did you see that Instant Family film with Mark Wahlberg and Rose Byrne, which I liked?
Did. Yeah, it was pretty good, actually.
She was the oldest kid in that, this one, Elizabeth Money, Isabelle Money, and she's very good.
Right.
And she's good in this. And the good thing about this film is it knows it's in on its joke. Like, at the beginning, when she's a little girl, you know, she looks to camera and says, "Can you say some word?" Because that's the way it does in Dora. And her parents go, "Is she all right? Like, who's she talking to?" They're kind of trying to make a joke out of it, and it works.
Right.
She grows up, she's sent to high school in America, where everybody thinks she's so sort of perky and annoying, but then they end up getting transplanted back to the jungle in search of this lost city. And it's actually, nicely done.
I'm trying to remember her. Now, in fact, Instant Family was quite a serious movie about adoption underneath it all.
Yes, it was.
Regardless of being a typical American comedy. Okay, give us Transit, the last one.
Transit, I really like. Transit was, I saw it in the Dublin Film Festival way back in March, and I really, really liked it. It's a film by Christian Berthold, and what it does is it's based on this novel by Anne Segers, a 1942 novel about the Nazi occupation of France, and about this character who ends up, he's supposed to help this famous sick writer get from Paris to Marseille to get an exit passage out, and the writer dies and he poses as him, and he ends up meeting the wife, who obviously doesn't know that he's posing as the writer. And but what he's done with it, he's kind of transposed it to the present, so it's still the Nazi occupation, but it looks like now, which sounds sort of troubling and Man in the High Castle like almost, but it's not troubling. It's actually really good. It's a very, very strong film. It's kind of like Kafka-esque, and the atmosphere is great in it, and all the colours change when they leave Paris and they go south. All the colours come up bright and everything. But this guy is bewildered. He's trying to get out, and it's just this kind of existential drama. Really, really good, actually. Really liked it. Okay. Limited release.
Okay, well, listen, Paul Whittington from the Irish Indo, thanks a million, Paul, for talking to us. Just very briefly there, Transit is definitely thumbs up. Dora and the Lost City of Gold for what it's trying to do. Yeah, sounds like thumbs up as well. Good Boys has some good jokes in it, but seriously, I don't know. Do we really need it? Hmm. And Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, it doesn't really matter. It's a Tarantino movie, so you know you're going to go or not go anyway, or something along those lines.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. All right, thanks a million, Paul. Good man.
Thanks.